Today's daf, brought to you from Eretz HaKadosh, is daf Kuf Gimel, and we're finishing up here on daf Kuf Beit, Omud Beit. We got to the next piece of the Mishnah, which is Ban Pilia Chalitzata Psula. So if you use a material kind of sock with a thick bottom, or a kippy shoe kind of thing, so it's mashma that that's not, means that that's not considered to be a shoe, and therefore the chalitza is possible. Ask the Gemara, is that what you're trying to say? Lameimra, the anpili alav min ali, and it does seem to say this, and in fact this is consistent with what we see in another Mishnah, because tanan nami ena torim nichnas lo befargot chafut velo banpilia. So here we have a problem. When you take, you're the one who goes inside to take out the trumat halishka from the lishka. Now, the moment that you go in there, of course, you are under suspicion. Who knows how much money you secreted in your pockets, in your shoes, in your cuffs? Who knows? So in order to avoid that, we make sure that you cannot go in with anything that would have a pocket, a hem, a cuff, or for that matter, with an anpilia. Because if you're wearing like a sock, you could always maybe stuff some money underneath and nobody would notice. Obviously, you can't go in with a min'al or a sandal, because anyway, no one is allowed to walk in the Beis HaMikdash with a min'al and a sandal. So forget about the question specifically over here. This is mibikei zot miyadchem remos chatzeroi. So remisa is to be sitting with, standing on the Beis HaMikdash with your shoes on. So that for sure is something that is us. Just by the way, there seems to be a, this is what Rashi brings, it seems to be a more fundamental reason, which is what's brought all over, and that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to make sure that because you're on Admas Kadesh, so he tells Moshe Beferish, Shal Nal Chami Al Raglecha. So why does Rashi bring this? This is a whole big discussion among the Rishonim, because with Pashtas, we don't need the Pasuk of Mibikesot Miyatchem for this. But all right, this is not our sugya. In any event, if we would have thought that Anpilia would be not like our Mishnah, meaning that Anpilia is considered to be a sock, a minal, so then why in the world would it be mentioned separately? Because minal v'sandal anyway is usher. And over here it says specifically it's only usher to wear the Anpilia because you're doing the Trumat Halishka, and people are going to suspect that you're hiding money in there. Mashma, that if not for that, it wouldn't be considered to be a shoe, which is all consistent with the Mishnah. But the problem is that it says beferish in the Braita, not like that, because there's another place where it's important to decide whether something is a shoe. Where is that? Yom Kippur. So one issue of a shoe is obviously benogeh chalitza. Another issue of a shoe is what's usher to walk in the Beis HaMikdash with, which is a bizayin to the Beis HaMikdash. But the third issue is you're not allowed to be wearing a shoe on Yom HaKippurim. And it says in the Braita that legabe Yom Kippur, echad min al v'sandal v'anpilia lo yitayel ben. You are not allowed to walk around with a minal, a sandal, well, that we know. Or, for that matter, with an anpilia, or with these socks, or kippy shoes, slippers, I mean. And you can't even do that in, forget about walking out in the shuk. You can't even walk from one room to another. You can't walk from one bed to another bed, for that matter, because this is considered to be usur to put on bechlal, not because it doesn't look good in terms of the outdoors, it's usur. So if that's the case, it's saying that anpilia is a shoe. So I'm very confused. Is it or isn't it? Amar Abaye, well, it's a different issue over there. When we're talking about Yom Kippur, we're talking about a soft sock that's filled with like a little foam, and it's very comfy. So the issue over there is that it's ta'anug on Yom Kippur. And therefore, it's nothing to do with being a shoe. Amalei Rava, since when are you not allowed to be comfortable on Yom Kippur? Who ever heard of such a thing? There are specific inuyim which are usher. We don't tell people you cannot do, what, you're not allowed to turn on an air conditioner in Yom Kippur? I mean, where does that come from? So, obviously, turn on is not, but you're not allowed to sit in air conditioning in Yom Kippur. Elo amar Rava, that's Ravatainus. Mishum tanuk below me now be amakipur mi asiri, since when is just having some level of pleasure usher? Varaba Baravuna Karak Sudra Karavinafik. I know that Rabba Baravuna, if he wanted to walk around, he put a soft beged around his foot to walk with. Why isn't that prohibited? Because it's comfortable. We're not interested in asering comfort. So then what is the answer to the contradiction between the status of an Anpilia vis-a-vis Yom Kippur, on the one hand, where it seems to be considered a shoe, and vis-a-vis the dinim of the Azara, where it's not considered to be a shoe, or Chalitza, where it's not considered to be a shoe? Elam Arava, I'll tell you, there's really no problem. There are obviously Anpiliot that could be made out of leather. So Lorkasha, if you're talking about on Yom Kippur, where you're wearing a leather Anpilia is what it's referring to, so Enochinami, that is similar to a shoe. And therefore, we said, you cannot wear it on Yom Kippur, even to go from one bed to another. But Khan, and we're talking about in the Azorah, or we're talking about in our Mishnah, Benugia Chalitza, it is made out of material, since that doesn't provide you any kind of protection. So it's not called Na'al, in the sense of the Analech Tachash, I will lock you in, protect your foot. This is no protection. I mean, we're going to step in a puddle and the water's going to come right in. I'm what kind of protection? And on the other hand, it's not, however, a degrading way to speak in the, to walk in the Beis HaMikdash, because you don't walk in your socks in mud and filth, and therefore you're trampling over the Beis HaMikdash. So on the contrary, in other words, if you want to have a nice Japanese home, you take off your shoes, but you still wear your socks. Same thing with shoe. Be true in the Beis HaMikdash. Take off your shoes. So in those terms, we're not talking about something that would be a bizoyan. So there's completely different issues that are involved in the different cases, and there's different types of anpilia. So an anpilia that is similar to a sock and does protect you, and it's made out of leather, will be also on Yom Kippur. Halchi nami mistavra di lo tema halchi kasha Yom HaKippurim HaYom HaKippurim. Look, forget about the issue of the difference between Yom Kippur definition of shoe versus the definition for Chalitza or the definition that we had about the Beis HaMikdash. If you're not willing to say that there are different types of anpiliot, and that sometimes we talk an anpilia that's made out of leather, and other times we could talk about that's made out of a non-protective material, the bottom line is you're going to have to deal with this issue in terms of Yom Kippur itself, okay? Because I'm going to show you that otherwise there's a contradiction even in the internal dinim of Yom Kippur between Anpilia and Anpilia. So don't bother your little mind about trying to say differences between Yom Kippur and between the issues of Chalitza. That's not where to look. You're going to need to be able to differentiate even for Yom Kippur itself. Take a look at this. Otherwise, you're going to have a contradiction in Yom Kippur. Kasha Yom HaKippurim Yom HaKippurim. Because on the one hand, we have a brisa that says, Lo yitayel adam b'kordekisin b'toch beito, avo mitayelhu ba'anpilin b'toch beito. So you cannot wear, Rashi brings very interesting, a German word, which of course is the Yiddish word, an unterschuch. So if you have something that is worn underneath the shoe, so that is something that it says you cannot walk around in your house with, because that is, in fact, made out of leather, and that is a protection. It's worn specifically to provide more waterproofing than the leather of your shoe is going to provide. And it says over there, you are allowed to wear these unpeeling, these socks. So didn't we just say a minute ago that you're not allowed to? So obviously you're going to have to distinguish between what type of anpilin you're talking about. Elalav shmamina kanban pilia shel or kanban pilia shel beged. Anyway, you're going to have to make this difference vis-a-vis Yom Kippur. And that basically proves shmamina. Indeed, we don't need to look anywhere else for the difference. Okay. So now we're saying that if it's made out of leather, So then it would be osur on Yom Kippur, but then bepashtos, it would be kosher bechalitza. Okay, fine. Now, Tanya Gavasi de Rava. This idea that Rava says over here, where we have a chalitza that is different, strange, and sort of Barnea-ish kind of, you know, like if you're a guy that likes to hold up cups of coffees and something, forgets to put on his yarmulke for daf yomi, things like that. That This is like on Yom Kippur, you're supposed to wear a yarmulke also, I think, but that wasn't part of the sugya. Next time, be more careful, Barnea. So anyway, we've got a list of these interesting chalitzas that are a little bit strange. So let's say you used the for the chalitza, I mean, al hanifram, which is chofed rov haregel. So the minal is torn, but it still is able to cover most of the foot. Or you could have a sandal that's broken. Of course, we use the word broken for a sandal because the sandal actually cracks because it's, remember, it's hard. Masha Inke and the Minal could have a tear and will still hold on. So we use different words. But the idea is the same. So as long as it's Mekabel Rov HaRegel, or you could use a sandal that is made out of sha'am or sieve. So it's made out of various materials or resins. And Kav Hakita, you could use even the wooden extension that an amputee uses to walk on, to extend his shul. Because it's like doesn't necessarily have to literally be the shape of a foot and so on, but it's an extension. It's a Kav Hakita. And you could be wearing a muk and use it for chalitza, which is like a kind of felt. And you could use a smichat haraglayim or an ampulia shel or. So this smichat haraglayim is if you've got someone who is severely crippled, what he would do if he can't walk on his legs, he drags his legs with his hands forward. And in order to make sure that they're not ripped up by rocks and things on the road, so you would put some kind of leather thing around them in order to protect it so they won't get all kinds of wounds from being dragged along. That is also considered to be a shoe. Okay, so it says over here that these are the different types, including an anpilia shel or. So here it says beferish, a leather anpilia, and it's going to say that it's kosher for chalitza, which is basically the difference that Rava was making. Once already we talk about the various types of semi-shoe kind of things that are kosher, so we also put in other dinim that are nogea the chalitza, ha-choletzet min ha-gadol, and whether you're standing or you're sitting or you're leaning, it's also going to be a good chalitza, which we're going to ask later. Remember, we talked about the idea that your foot has to be pressed down in the ground. So we're going to ask, okay, well, what happened to that? We'll talk about that in a moment. Or somebody who does chalitza when the yovam is blind. What's the problem being blind? Well, because remember, we had a drasha, as Tosis explains, that the bezdin has to be ro'eh, because they have to see the actual spit. So we might have thought the same thing as din, is the din of the yovam himself, right? So, because it says lefanav, it has to be be'enav, so maybe he needed to see it, and to see it too. All of this is not nogea. In all of these cases, the chalitz is kshera. But if it was a minal anifram that doesn't cover most of the foot, or it's a sandal anifchat that doesn't cover most of the foot, or if it's a cripple who covers his hands in order to drag his body forward, because he's basically using his hands to do what feet usually do. So the fact that he covers them with a thick leather in order to protect them doesn't make it a na'al, even though they perhaps are acting the way a foot does, but that's not a na'al. Or if a person uses an anpilia shel beged, you see? So this is not kosher. That's the difference, anpilia shel or versus anpilia shel beged. And somebody who gets chalitza from a yovam who is a katan, chalitza tapsula, those cases are completely possible. But meanwhile, you see exactly what Rava said, that there's a big difference between an anpilia, which is or an anpilia that is not. Okay, question over here is what exactly we mean. We're going to see later on when we say chalitza tapsula. I'm not saying ena chalitza. Usually when we say chalitza tapsula, or ein choshin leklum, as opposed to chalitza tapsula, what we mean is the chalitza is not matir, so she's still a yevama l'shuk, but it is oser on the other brothers. That we're going to see later on, precisely where the situations are. Is the chalitza v'katan oser, really? Or some of these other cases, is it oser on the brothers? This brisa is going to serve us as a source of certain halachas as we go along. But anyway, once we have this price, it's fascinating because it says over here that the kav of a kita is considered to be a shoe. Now, that is not true according to everybody. By the way, there's a big, big machlokas. When we say it's a shoe, do we mean, like Rashi says, that it is a shoe for the kita? So in other words, if the yavam is a kita, so then the Yavama can take off his prosthetic foot. It's like a little weird, isn't it? But this is how Rashi understands it. That's what we're learning from Me'al Raglo. Remember that Me'al Raglo means even if he's left without an actual foot, but he has a shoke, so then it's considered to be a foot. But Tosfos doesn't like that approach at all. And he tainas, based on the Yerushalmi, that the idea over here is not that he himself can get chalitza, but that he can lend a prosthetic foot to someone who has a foot, and that that would be considered to be a shoe. This is also a little bit weird. But according to the Yerushalmi, the point of Be'al Raglo that we darshaned is not that he doesn't need a foot, it's that the whatever he's using as the shoe can be tied above the foot on the shoke. And that when she therefore unties the shoe to remove it, she is working on the area above his foot and not on the foot itself. And that's the chiddush of the Me'al Raglo. Very, very different approach. But almost everybody here agrees with Rashi. Oh no. Barnea is loose. Well, we'll see if it's on the other foot as we go along. That's a machlokas, if it's on the other foot, actually. The left foot. But we did talk about a left shoe on a right foot. Anyway, so who's the man d'yomer that is matir, the kavakita? That's Rebbe Meir. Because that, we learned in Shabbos. Whoa, now we got another issue. We have to decide is something a shoe. Okay, so now we got four issues to decide. Because if something is a shoe, then if you're wearing it on Shabbos, then obviously you're allowed to go out in Rishus HaRabim. Halach HaRabim is Rishus HaRabim. But if it's not a real shoe, then it's not considered to be a beget, so it's like you're carrying it. So we have to decide what is considered to be a shoe vis-a-vis Hotzah of Shabbos. Now, it's Rebbe Meir who said in the Sugya in Shabbos, that's a Mishnah, it says over there, Hakitea Yotzei Bekav Shelo. So if the person is amputated, he can go out on Shabbos wearing his kav. It could be a prosthetic foot or just an extension of a wooden foot, whatever it is. So says Rebbe Meir. But Rebbe Yossi answers. Now, the truth is, as Tosfos points out, this is a bit of a problem because we're gonna, the sugya over there comes out, not there, but the same sugya in Yuma, comes out that there's another problem over there. Not necessarily that Rabbi Yossi argues about that, but that the question is he liable to take it off and carry it in Rishus HaRabim because of other problems, pain, and so on and so forth. So that, fine, obviously we're ignoring that over here, and we're just going down to the simplest understanding. It's Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yossi. So there's Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim. So over here, Rabbi Yossi answers Rabbi Meir's matter. That means this is going a little bit of Rabbi Meir. The problem is that when the Braisa afterwards says that an anpilia shel beged is considered to be pasul, there we're going aliba the Rabbanan. because the Rabbanan disagree with Rebbe Meir about the Kav HaKitah. What is the basis of this? Apparently, to be consistent, if we're going to learn the Pasuk Ve'en Alech Tachash, remember that that became the Makor. So if you hold that, so then none of these things are similar to Tachash, are they? I'm going to use a tennis shoe. That's not like a Tachash. We talked about Sha'am and so on. So, I mean, it seems to be across the board. So how is it that in one sense, we're talking about a Kav HaKitah? I mean, that's not anything like a Tachash. We had Naal, that was matir leather from other animals, but it didn't say you could use, I don't know, a cloth shoe, a rubber shoe. It doesn't say that. But the Braisa says you can. So we seem to have two completely different issues over here. To be able to use a wooden thing, which is the Kav HaKitah, so then that would be the Pashtus only if you don't darshan the plastic. So you're going a little bit of Rebbe Meir. Masha Einkein, when you're telling me, well, but you can't use a sock if it isn't made out of leather, so then we're going about according to the Rabbanan. So how do we do that in one Braisa? Rabbi, no. Obviously, look, if the part is that talks about the Anpilia is going according to Rabbanan, it makes sense that the Reisha is also going according to Rabbanan. And even though it's true that the extension of the foot of the amputee, the Kitea, is considered to be here a Min'al, maybe it's talking about that it's covered with leather and it's not wood. Which is very reasonable, because anyway, we're trying to get a softer cover for him, right, to put in the stump. So because of that, it would be talking about mechupeor. So if it's mechupeor, so then everybody would be made that it's a shoe. Omele Rova. So what are you saying? You're saying that a case in which the kitea is wearing something that's not mechupeor, so then what? It would be possible. So it's only kosher because we are darshaning tachash. And this is referring to a case where it has a covering of leather, right? So then explain to me, why would we need to contrast the Anpilia with the case of the Kitea? All we would need to do is say, so when do we say that this wooden extension is considered to be a actual kosher shoe? Only if it's Bechupa Or, but if it's not Bechupa Or, so then it would be possible. Why do we need to switch over to start talking about Anpiliot? Elam Arava, I would suggest just the opposite of what you're saying, Abaye. I would say if the first part of the price is going a little bit of Rebbe Meir, who clearly is not mocked on the din of the Ani Elech, right? But that is really not the case, because there is still a concept of Na'al, and the difference is that we have to look at whether it is protective or not. That would be the issue. It doesn't necessarily have to be exactly the way that the Tachash is made out of the skin of the Tachash, but it's certainly the meaning of a Na'al is that you're going to be protected by it. So therefore, that Rebbe Meir for sure holds up. Those who darshan from an Alech Tachash has to be literally similar to Tachash. I mean, remember that Tosfos even considered the question, like, what would we think that it would need to be literally a Tachash? So, okay, so then that's true that there's a Machlokas, but Rebbe Meir is certainly made that there's a difference between Megin and Lo Megin. So therefore, if the issue is Megin or not, so then that means that that is certainly true. Now, it's mashma. The question is whether it comes dafka from the pasuk, which is the mashmot of Rashi, or whether the simple meaning of na'al, as we saw before, is that I will enclose you, lock you up, protect you on some level. Omra Meimar, another issue which we already discussed earlier when we were talking about the question of the where we get this idea that it's necessary for the Yevamah to be using her right hand. Remember, we went through some of the halachas without getting to the Gemaras yet. She's going to be using her right hand to be able to be matir, the knot or the straps, and her left hand to push down on his foot to make sure that he's pressing against the ground. And that came when we started the discussion of most of the pressure being on the akev. So when we're talking about her releasing the shoe from the heel, that would be the moment that she becomes muteret. So we started discussing this issue. Here comes Olga Meymar and says that because of this, there is an actual need. It is essential that he be pressing down on his shoe while it is that she is doing the chalitza. Now, there's a big machlokas we've shown him over here about whether this is like just like a gezeira kind of thing, or this is the actual meaning of chalitza. So, I mean, like the Rush says, and some other Rishonim, that the problem over here is that sometimes a shoe comes off so easily that the people that are there will think that it really wasn't connected to her, so she didn't do an act of chalitza, they'll be mater, because they just see it from afar, really. And because of that, we want it to be tough. So he should press down with his foot, and therefore she's fighting with him, in a sense, to get it off. And just in case he doesn't do it properly, she herself fights against herself, her left hand against her right hand. And so in that way, it's a scuffle to get off the shoe. So that makes the chalitza very evident. But the Ramban learns that it's be'etzem part of the chalitza. So in other words, the idea that she is removing his ability to stand on this shoe, not just removing a shoe, that's not the point. She's trying to take away the earth upon which he stands, so to speak, to show that he's completely like without any real concern for reality. So in that sense, it would be a deraisa, because he redefines the nature of the chalitza. That is a completely different approach. According to that, it's a deraisa, and if you miss it, you'd have to do it again. Most of the poskim say that it's just because we don't want people to make the mistake. Omer le Rav Ashi la Meimar.
One would fit with, he doesn't have a leg to stand on, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be that idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, it's used like that way. Oh, we talked about the way that it's used in terms of support, in terms of Yaakov Avinu and with the Giran Noshe and things like that. That's why we call bankruptcy in terms of feet, because he doesn't have what to stand on. Pashat lo et haregel is the Gemara's reference in a modern Hebrew as well. Pashat lo et haregel, in which you have nothing to stand on. Anyway, so the problem is, didn't we just read in the Brisa that it's okay if he's lying down? I mean, so if he's lying down, doesn't that mean like, okay, he's on an easy chair and she comes and takes off the shoe? So how could he possibly say over here that he has to be doing this in a way to show that he doesn't have a leg to stand on? It says, ben omeid, ben yoshev, ben mutan. We just learned that. So, but why does that mean that he's, the idea over here is not necessarily that he's standing. The idea is that she is removing that which is the part of him that would stand. That's the idea. So as long as he may be back in an easy chair, but he can't have his feet up. So his foot will have to be pressing downwards, and then she would pull it off. So therefore, it's not really a contradiction. Ama, add to that, yes, it's true, but he still would have to be pressing his foot against the ground. The Omra Mema, a guy who walks, I'm not Damaske, Alichata Dechare, lo cholitz. So this person has got a very deformed foot. So his foot is twisted the other way. We had this, remember when we were talking about the terrible story in which Rav Ashi asked these two guys who were there at Maspidim, right? And he said to them, well, what are you going to say at my Hesped? And then he didn't like it. And he got angry at them. And then they ended up with their feet twisting. Anyway, so there we said that they can't do chalitza. This is the mocker of that. So Meimar said, if somebody actually, his foot is so twisted that when he walks really against the upper of his foot as opposed to the sole of his foot. So he can't do chalitza because that is not considered to be a regal. He's not walking on the regal. So since it has to be miraglo, this is not considered to be chalitza. Now, the question over here is, obviously, how is that different from the question not having a foot at all? I mean, is this is worse than not having a foot at all? We just said that if he doesn't have a foot, you could still use the prosthetic foot. So Rashi says, yes, because the the shoke is the me'al raglo, but this is not me'al raglo either. And so because of that, you can't do it for chalitza. Again, this is assuming that you really can do chalitza for a person who doesn't have a foot. But as I mentioned before, this is bichlal not at all clear, because this is the big machlokas that we had. Tosis over here, tiny, that makes no sense. And it seems to be based on the Yerushalmi that we're talking about something completely different. We're talking about where you tie the shoe and not that the person literally doesn't have the foot at all. That would be the din of the me'al raglo, not the way that we were understanding it. Because of this, anyway, the Gemara says he can't do chalitza. Amale Rav Ashi la'amemar, wait a minute, we said that if somebody is going to do chalitza utilizing smuchot haraglayim, that's good. I mean, smuchot haraglayim, that was talking about these things that he puts over feet that he can't walk on. We said that he drags his feet with his hands, and in order to protect them from getting wounded, and when he's dragging them through rocks or whatever, you put on this thick leather covering. And we said that that is considered to be a shoe. So I'm very confused, because if that is considered to be a shoe, then how can the person who can't walk on that foot at all, how is that considered to be better than the case that we just had, that the guy's foot is all twisted? This is worse, no? Says the Gemara, well, yes, it doesn't mean that he can do chalitza. He doesn't have a foot. So you can't do chalitza to him. But if somebody wants to borrow these leather protectors for the foot, and he puts it on his foot, which is a usable foot, that's what it means. So it means the yoiv leila acher. He can give this to somebody else, and the other person can use it. That's all it means. Ravashi. So what Amemar just explained is that basically Bar Uba cannot do chalitza and Bar Kitov cannot do chalitza. Now Bar Uba and Bar Kitov, those were the two people that gave the Hespedim. They were the famous Maspedim. They made the mistake of telling Rav Ashi, looking it up in their files, you know, we've got all of the New York Times, they prepare all of what do they call them? I'm telling you. Yes, thank you. They prepare the obituary columns like 20 years before the guy dies. So he just wants to see what does it say in his obituary. You know? So they made the mistake of telling Rav Ashi, and that got them into big trouble. So Bar Uba and Bar Kifuf, their feet were twisted in that way. Okay, let's take a look at the next piece. So the Mishnah says that if you do the chalitza from beneath the knee, Minar Kuva Lamata, it's kosher. And as we mentioned before, it's Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos about, and many of the other shouldn't get involved, about what this is referring to. Where it's tied, like the Rishani, or where he literally is wearing something on a stump. Now, we do have yet another place where we have to decide whether someone is walking the way that would be Mechayev him. And of course, we just had that in Chagiga. So the question over there, remember that it says both Regel and Pa'am when it comes to Aliyah Regel. Shalosh Pa'amim, and a Pa'am is the palm of your foot. It's the walking of your foot. And it's also a Regel, a foot, which of course is both of them are time-oriented. Regel is a time, and palm is a time, right? Once, palm. Okay, so this was part of the whole interrelationship that we had between time and distance that we saw in Chagiga. So now the relationship over here, to our sugya, is that we darshaned over there, shalosh regalim. So the shalosh regalim means you need an actual foot. In the end, the truth is, in the end, the Gemara learns this out from Palm. But fine, I mean, it's not all that important. But what is important to us is the Gemara over there said, Prat le bale kabin. So if you have these bale kabin, despite the fact that they certainly have legs, right, that is not considered to be a regel. But over here we said it is considered to be a regel. No, it's not. By Yibam, you don't need the regel. You need me'al raglo. And that is okay, Mashenkin, over there. You don't have that remez to something that would be above the regel. Wait a minute. So if that's true, why does it have to be necessarily a stump, according to Rashi, or a prosthetic connection to a stump, the way Rashi was learning, or a place where you tie a shoe, according to the other Rishonim, that is bedavka beneath the knee? Why does that add up? And if the Torah said above, so then it's above the foot, right? I mean, isn't the whole thigh is above the foot, right? So lamalam and arkuvanami. So why can't it even be referring to something that is worn by even an amputee above the knee, or according to the other Rishonim, where the shoe is tied above the knee? No, because it says me'al. Me'al is one step up. Does it say me'al, me'al? You can't get beyond that one step. So it's only the leg that is directly connected to the foot, as opposed to the thigh, where you have the whole knee in between. That's called me'al, me'al. Says Rav Papa, well, I mean, if that's the case, you're going to have to conclude that the ankle bone, even though it has so many different parts to it, and it's quite a complex construct, it must be, lahalacha, considered to be one bone that goes all the way down to the ground. Because otherwise, if you're going to tell me that we view it as being separate bones, so then it is the me'al. But then the shok itself, which is between the ankle and the knee, would be me'al de me'al already. So that means that we're viewing it all as one thing. How come, I mean, that's very strange, because certainly it's going to be hard to get Ramach Evarim if you're not going to be able to analyze the different parts of the knee, which are important parts, and of the ankle, which are important parts of the Rov Minyan of Atzomas, and so on. So is that true? Omer Vashi, no, it's not true. Because we're not talking about over here the technicalities of bone structure. The truth is, afilu tema mifsak posik, I don't care how many small components there are in that area. Because even if it's considered to be not really going all the way down to the heel, but the point is that kol debahade kara kikara dami. It could be that technically it's 20 bones above. That isn't a point. But since it is all directly, without any other kind of confusing side issues, it goes directly downwards. So it's not like a big connection that can be like a knee that is viewed as a completely different part. So that, remember that in terms of the halacha, when the pasuk refers to something, it refers to the general impression, the way people look at it. This is called raglo. And the entire bone that goes up to the knee is called me'al raglo. It's not as if we're going to x-ray his foot and decide like which part is considered to be me'al me'al. So you can't make that diuk. Anyway, if, however, this kav goes above the knee, then the chalitz is possible. Again, the machlokas doesn't mean that the shoe is tied above the knee, or does it mean that this person is an amputee and that he's wearing a prosthetic leg, not just a prosthetic foot. So what that implies is that the word regel is not the thigh. So when we talk about a foot, we mean me'al raglo, we mean not the entire bone that supports his body, the structure of bones that support his body above the foot. We mean up to the knee, which means that the thigh is not called regel at all. But that's very strange, because when we refer, this is one of the terrible parts of the Tochacha, so when it says, Ubishul yata hayot seit mi bein raglea, that Rachmona Litzlan, that there will be such hunger that a woman will actually fight and not give away to the people closest to her own afterbirth, but that afterbirth, that shilya, it says, that comes out from between her legs. I mean, how does it come out between her legs? It comes out from between her thighs, right? So why does it say mi bein ragleha? So apparently, we do refer to ragleha as the entire structure, including even this. So it would appear. So how do you explain that? Omer Abaye, that's because b'sha'asha korat leleid no'etzet akaveh b'yarkoteh v'yoledet, because a position, a very useful position for birth, is to have the heel against the thigh, which means that it's actually yotzeit bein ragleha, not only bein yarkoteha. So that's why it uses that. Okay, fine. Look, how about the story that we have over here about Mephibosheth? So over there it says, lo asa raglav, velo asa sfamosh. So he was showing that he's in mourning for the fact that David HaMelech had left Yerushalayim, and it says that he did not shave his pubic hair, and it calls it raglav. So I don't understand. Last I heard, pubic hairs are not between feet. They are between thighs. So how does that work? That's just a nice way of talking. I mean, obviously, anyway, what do you mean, bein raglav, sa raglav? I mean, it isn't raglav. So we're using a euphemism, that's all. Okay, well, what about Shaul, who goes into the cave, lahaseich et raglav? I mean, I don't know how anybody can use a bathroom between his feet. I mean, he's got to use the bathroom between his thighs, doesn't he? So isn't that a strange? It's also a euphemism. Come on. I mean, so we don't want to talk. I mean, once you're using a euphemism, so you're going to speak about something that is less ugly. So you don't want to get even close to what you're really saying. Well, how about Sisera? Sisera was sitting there sleeping with Yael, and it says bein ragleha kara, that over there we refer to how it is that he was defeated by having so much intercourse with her that she just completely wore him out. And over there it says bein ragleha, that he fell between her feet. Now, it's pretty hard to have intercourse between feet. And it says, kara, nafal, shachav. And again, it repeats, bein raglea, kara, nafal, vasher kara. I mean, it's all about feet. But here we're referring to thighs as feet. Oh, come on, intercourse is also, I mean, we're using euphemisms. Stop asking me the same question. Omer of Yochanan, once you analyze the number of times, yeah, it's, what a weird pasuk, isn't that? I mean, to complete, you say, how many times do you need to say the same thing? I mean, you made your point. So you're saying, ben raglea, kora, nafal, shachav. Ben raglea, kora, nafal. Then you say, ba'asher kora, sham nafal, shadud. I mean, how many times was he kora v'nafal? Ah, says Rabbi Yochanan, that's the point. This guy was a he-man, let me tell you. 7 times in a row, he goes and sleeps with her right there. She really got him tired out. So that is the pasuk. Shenema bein raglea, kora, nafal, shachav, kora, nafal, kora, nafal. So each one of those is another bia. And therefore, we have it 7 times. But wait a minute. Once you're saying that, isn't it a little strange? This is the way Tosafos understands the kasha. Isn't it a little strange that we take for granted? I mean, because what this pasuk is talking about is how marvelous Yael is, right? That's like part of the whole song. This is what we're singing about her after the war. This is Dvorah is talking about what it is that Yael did and so on. And it says over there that she is considered to be greater than the Imahais. Because it says, Tevorech minashim Yael eshet chever hakeni minashim ba'ohel Tevorech. That was a reference to the Imahot. So, I mean, you can say that she did great things, but I mean, the fact is, says the Gemara, why is she better than the Imahot? So the Gemara over there says that Gedola Avera Lishma Mimitzvah Shelo Lishma. So all of this, that she was tiring him out, that she was going to bust him and kill him, and that would be such a bizoyan for Sisera the He-Man that a woman gets her, that it was all L'shem Shamayim. And you're telling me that when the Imahot slept with their husbands, it wasn't L'shem Shamayim? I mean, like, why? So I understand that you're telling, this is how Tosafos explains it, that you're telling me that even though the Imahot obviously were b'chavnot L'shem Shamayim, but the bottom line is that there is involvement in the pleasure of sex. And that pleasure itself reduces the totality of the mesira that a person is giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here you're talking about a rather enthusiastic orgy, aren't you? I mean, so it's all very nice that Yael wanted Sisera to get all worn out. But I mean, come on. I mean, she's got to be really heavy duty over here. Isn't she having fun? So if this is the case, why are we, I understand. So she's great, but she's not greater than the Imos, is she? That you should say, G'dayla Avera Lishma. Why is that totally Lishma? She was having fun. Omer Reb Yochanan, Mishum Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, no fun. Why? Because Kol Tovatan Shel Rishaim Ra'ahi Etzel Tzadikim. For its torture for Tzadikim to be exposed to this filth. Shenemar Hishomer Lecha. Take a look what happens when Yaakov is being chased by Lavan. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Lavan, don't you dare say a word, whether it's for good or bad. Not a word. Now, I understand. Bad, obviously. We don't want to say anything. L'chayai. Very nice. But why does Hashem say to Lavan, don't say anything nice to him? Have anything, any intercourse with you is disgusting. Goodbye. I don't want to hear from you. I understand that over there it makes sense that there's something ugly about needing to even talk to Lavan. You know, he could be talking about calling an Avodah Zarah a god, which is what basically he's talking about him. Why'd you steal the my Elohim and so on, right? So I need to hear this disgusting thing that you're saying? So I understand why Hashem said not to talk to him. But, I mean, what bad happened to her that you should say she's not having fun? Why wouldn't she be having fun? What bad is there? No, of course it's bad. The Kashade Bezuama. He inserted in her the same thing that the Nachash did to Chava. Like it says over there, that's Zuama. Zuama is disgust. Something that is completely filthy. So B'sha'ah Sheba Nachash al Chava, that made her vulnerable to Tuma and to disgusting things. And the person who gets involved in that is torn apart by the disgustingness of it, and he doesn't even realize it until it's too late. That's exactly what Ra does. So to her, the fact that I would be penetrated by this pig is basically like the Nachash. It's pure phallic nausea. And Hitel Bazuama, that's the point. So how is it? It's okay, but that's Chava. So once we're all in that state anyway, and even might fall asleep during Daf Yomi, yes. So once we're in that state anyway, so what more can go wrong, right? Aha, we're not in that state. Because Yisrael Shamdu Al Har Sinai Paska Zuhu Matan. So anyone that was standing at Har Sinai or whose neshama was on Har Sinai, that disgusting uncleanliness was not in them any longer. So Sisera, who was an Oved Kochavim, he wrecked Yael. So she wasn't having any fun. She was feeling disgusted. Okay, next. And we said that you to use a shoe that's not his is also kosher. Toner Rabbanan, it says, Chotza Na'alo, that means his shoe. So how could it be kosher? Ainli Elo Na'alo, how do we know that you can use someone else's shoe? Talmud Lomar Na'al, it says once again, a Na'al, because it says Beit Chalutza Na'al, which means a Na'al, Mikom Makom, wherever he got it from. So then why does it say Na'alo? That means it has to fit. Na'alo Haro'ilo, but it cannot be so big that he can't walk in, like we saw, and it cannot be so small that it doesn't cover robe. Uprat l'sandala mesulayim she'en lo akev. Also, a type of sandal. I mean, many think it means that it's broken. But Rashi, and Tosis points out also, Bashman the Yerushalmi, a mesulayim means that it's made as a sandal that supports the front part of the foot and doesn't have an akev in the first place. So that's called hamesulayim, which is a sole only, no heeled sandals. That would be mesulayim, right? As a sole. And that means that the over there, the Bryce is saying that it is kosher, in other words, for Na'alo, even if it's not his, but it has to be a Na'al. Abaye was there in the Beis HaMedrash in front of Rav Yosef, and a Yavama comes into the Beis HaMedrash, and she wants Rav Yosef to be the dayan to handle the chalitza. So Rav Yosef says to Abaye, please, can you give him your sandal? So Abaye gives the Yavam his left sandal, which, of course, we said before, it has to be his right foot. Why? So Rav Yosef, what? He said, what are you doing? The Rabbanan said you can use if you use. Then why didn't you give him the right foot? Well, says Abaye, seems to me that they also said you can use a sandal she'eno shalo if you did, but it's not meant to be the way to do it. So I basically hint, hint. So this was the way that he got Rav Yosef's attention. Well, I mean, if you want to do a bidiyavad chalitza, I'll give you more bidiyavad. Here, use a left shoe, right? Okay, so but they never said the chatchila. So how did you do this? Oh, my lady, well, what do you think I meant? For heaven's sakes, I meant, give it to him, but give it to him to keep, meaning that it should be in whatever. It's like all of the cases where you need a technical ownership. Give him your shoe. What do you think I was talking about to do it? And then we said a sandal shell eitz is kosher. Mantana or Mashmul, well, that's got to be going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir, based on the Mishnah in Shabbos, in which Hakitea Yotze Bekav Shalo, and it's considered to be wearing a shoe. Divrei Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi Oser. Whereas Avuah de Shmuel says, why do you have to make the Mishnah going only like Rabbi Meir? We said already there's a difference if it's covered with leather. And if it's covered with leather, even though it is made out of wood, everybody would be made of that. That is considered to be a proper na'al. Omer of Papi, Mishmeda Rava, Sandal Hamuzgar, Lotachalotzbo, Vim Chalza, Chalitzata Kishera, Sandal Hamuchlat, Lotachalotzbo, Vim Chalza, Chalitzata Pesula. So now the question is like this. As you know, and we went through all of the dinim in of Tzoras. So if you have a shoe that has a nega on it, and it was musgar, so it's still within the 7 days, we're going to be looking at it again. You should not use it for chalitza. Why? Because we're afraid you'll end up using a sandal mukhlat. We'll see in a moment. A sandal mukhlat, if you used it, it would be parcel. So because of that, don't lechatchila use a sandal that is even musgar, even though there's no reason not to. Why? Because since if it already is musgar, is already mukhlat, the halacha is that you have to burn it, and we have a particular shiur that it needs to be basically the size of your foot. This is considered not to have the shear. Why? Because michtat ktute shiure. This is one of your important concepts to please write down. And Moshe Foreman, please put this in your card list. Michtat ktute shiure, which is nogeya, according to, anyway, summary shown him, another general rule, which is kola omed lisrof, kisoruv dummy. If something is going to be burned, even though it isn't, we view it as being destroyed. So since it's destroyed, it lacks a shear. Now, not everybody agrees that those two things are interrelated, but the point is that anything that requires a shear, which this does, because we need to discover rove, cannot be in a place where it is halachically meant to be burned. And that would not have a shear. Therefore, if you use such a na'al, it wouldn't be kosher because of the problem of the size of the na'al. Rav Papa Mishmeda Rava Amar, actually, it doesn't make any difference. Echad sandal hamuzgar, echad sandal hamuchlat, lo tachalotzba. But if you did, it still is considered to be a proper shoe, as we'll see. And we don't say that it's michtat shiurei at all. Really now, says the Gemara of Papa. So then how do you explain the fact that we have the Mishnah in the Goyim that says, Bayit HaMuzgar Mitame Mitocho, Bayit HaMuchlat Mitocho Me'achorav. So first of all, remember that there's an actual din of Tuma on the Bayit itself. So if you touch, even if you didn't get into the house, which would be a different, that's a din in being Boil HaBayit, but if you just put your hand in and you touch the inside of the oyel, so then it will be metame you. And if you touch the outside, however, it will not be metame you. On the other hand, if we're talking about a muchlat, then it will be metame you either inside or the outside. Okay, now, there's a completely different way of learning this, which has to do with the nichnas el habayit. Not that he touched it. We're not talking about an ohel that's tame, but rather whether bia into the house is only if you're walking in or even if you're walking in backwards. But we'll take the simple meaning here because, again, for our purposes, all we're trying to get into is the question of ksuse michtat shiure. So now the thing is this piece. So if you're walking into it, then it would be metameyu. And the halacha is that this goes according to rov. So if rov of the person comes in, so then it's metame bevia. But the problem is that it's considered to be, if it's muchlat, it's supposed to be burned. So then how could you talk about rov? There is no such thing. It says haba el habayit. There is no bayit because basically it's ksuse michtat shiure, right? So it'd be the same thing as the shoe that has saraz, as the bayit that has saraz. And therefore, tain is the Gemara that according to Rav Papi, it would be the ksuse michtat shiure over here also, muskar or muchlat. No. Shine hosam, because it says, vinatatz et habayit. Vinatatz et habayit is, means that at the time that you actually do netitza, it's still called a bayit. Why? Isn't it ksuse michtat shiure? So that's good for the point. So the Torah is telling you that even though normally enoch inami, it loses its shame because of ksuse michtat shiure, here it doesn't. Now that was good for Rav Papa's father, who argued. Toshma, matlis sheyeshpo shalosh al shalosh. So here remember that the shear of a beged, as we saw in Kalim, is three fingers, which is actually a thumb, by three thumbs, right? And that is enough to be makabel tuma. Now that's true even if it doesn't have a shear of kezias. So it's thin material. It's three by three at Zibaot, and it does not have enough to be the same volume that a Zayit has. Kivan shenichdas ruba labayit tahor timato. If it has tzaras and it goes into a house that's tahor, that's the same as a mitzora that's bo el habayit. That's metame the house. Now, I'm assuming that what we're talking about over here, a piece of beged that is muchlat. But if it's muchlat, how could it possibly be shalosh al shalosh by coming into ruba? There's no concept of ruba on something that is ksuse michta shiure. Now, this is a very important distinction that needs to be made over here that the achronim speak about and don't explain properly. Rashi says that there's a difference between the ruba, which over there, if it's ksuse michta shiure, would not be metame the house until the whole thing is in the house. So, of course, everybody asks, well, what's the difference? If you're going to tell me ktute michta shiure, who cares whether it's 3x3 entirely or whether it's the rove of 3x3? The important nakuda over here, gentlemen, is that ksuse michta shiure is only a din in shiurim. It is not a din in what is defined as the thing. The thing is here. It's not here because ksuse michtat shiure. I see it here. Don't tell me it's not here. If you're dealing with a shear, wherever you're dealing with rove, then you're dealing with a shear by definition. How could there be a rove on something that doesn't have a shear? That's ridiculous. There's no measurement of one part versus the other part. So if this is a beged, it will be metame. But if it's rov of a beged, it will not be the rov of a beged. That's the way that Rashi seems to be understanding it. And therefore, since over here it says ruba, it seems to be a raya that you cannot call it ksusim ichashira, even though it's talking about a mukhlat. Says the Gemara, who says it's talking about a mukhlat? Maybe it's talking about a muzgar. No, it can't be talking about a muzgar. Because take a look at the seifa. The seifa says, if it's a very thick cloth, in which case it has a shear, let's say, of 3 kizayim in it, then the halacha is that as long as 1 kizayis, and 1 kizayis could be a lot smaller than the 3x3 because it's a very thick material. So if 1 kizayis gets into the house, it's metame. Now that means that we're talking about the type of tzorat that is metame b'kizayit. What type of tzorat is metame b'kizayit? Only a of tzorat which is mukhlat. Because tzorat which is mukhlat is considered to be the equivalent of a mace. And that's exactly what Aaron was saying. Al na tehi kamet. We have to cure her before she's mukhlat. Well, she's going to be like a mace. Okay, so then that means a mace, I understand, is metame b'kizayit. So we're comparing b'kizayit. But if it's only muskar, then there is no tumah of a kizayit. So obviously, when we're talking about over here, this beged, we are talking about mukhlat and afal pikein. If it comes in rove, that's enough. So iyamet b'shlama mukhletet. That explains why it's similar to the mate. But ela yamet musgaret, if it's only musgar, how is it metame b'kizayis? There's no place in the Torah where we consider it to be the equivalent of a mace. Fine. That's the pashtus of the sugya. There's a lot of kashas on this from the Rambam, who doesn't seem to make a chilek that he learns as a din of any tzaras being metame, the pashtus being metame, b'kizayis, which is a big shiloh from this Gemara. Again, it's just something to remember so that you can feel at home in the discussion among the Achronim and Rishonim about how the Rambam learns this sugya. But anyway, yamet musgeret amai iskish lemes, answers the Gemara, because it's the same thing that we said before. You're right. We made a mistake. We're not talking about a muzgar. We're talking about a mukhlat. But even so, you can't ask a kasha on Rav Papi from here who says, ksusei michta shiure, because over here, it wouldn't matter when it comes to tzoras, because the Omar Kra visoraf et habeget. So the Torah insists on calling it a beged afilu b'sha'at sreifa. It's called a beged. Okay, so then clearly it's telling us that it's not considered to be, it's considered to be a whole beged, and it's not ksusei michta shiure. But okay, so then learn from that, that it's the same thing for chalitza. I mean, why should we only learn it for tzaras? The Torah is telling me it's considered to be a full beged, even though it's being burned. That's because you cannot learn the dinim of Isser from dinim of Tuma. So it's true that Saraz is considered to be, even if it's Mukhlat, is considered to not be missing a shear. So, but you can't say, and therefore if you have a Na'al that is Mitzorat, that it's not missing the shear, because one is a din in Isurim and one is a din in Tuma. There's never any comparison between special halachas that are given over in terms of tuma to necessarily carry over to Isser at all. Okay, to be continued tomorrow in this exciting sugya. And we're wishing you meanwhile by the way, why did we meet so late? Wasn't it because that Akiva was in Cape Town? And Akiva looks very, very suspiciously like he's right there in his own house, judging by the room. Unless that's just a virtual background. So, no. Okay.
Rabbi, I think Rabbi might have left out a line.
You're kidding. Barnea is the one who does that. Now, whose side are you on after all? You're, which line did I leave off?
Between the crew from Shaul and then we started with Yael.
Yeah, Rebbe left out Eglon.
Oh, dear me. Why didn't you tell me then?
I was afraid I was in the warp. I said no.
I didn't see it. I'm sorry. All right. Well, you know what? We'll do it tomorrow, and Benny will insert it in the Daf Bezrat Hashem.
But as long as he raised it, Rashi said,
yes.
Like Eglon, it's not. No.
You certainly don't need to wait more than 21 and a half seconds, which is the normal urination time for all mammals of the typical size. Yes, believe it or not, somebody did the research on that. So the relationship of bladder size to body size in mammals empties a bladder in 21 and a half seconds. Very difficult to believe that they waited odd bush for Eglon to finish urinating. So, I mean, unless he had serious problems.
And the smell. And the
toxic. Yes, and the smell, of course. Yes, I'm sorry, of course.
I thought my shoulder was the same thing.
I also did. When you read the pasuk, certainly that's the mashmaut, and the idea of his covering himself and so on, that the Gemara says that he saw how tsanua he was with Beit Akise and so on. I mean, that certainly does not seem to be a urination issue at all. So I don't know why, you know, Rashi specifically talks about it in terms of urinating. Maybe, you know, it's just, a nicer way of saying it, you know, for talking about euphemisms. I was thinking about the question of the Merag Lion issue, which was Barnea pointed out is absurd in terms of Eglon, where the Pusik stresses the idea of having sliced open his intestines, that everybody thought he was using the bathroom. Obviously, that's not for urine. So I could not, it's so strange, I couldn't find anybody that addresses why the Gemara over here in Rashi would stress an error. And then I realized it's very partial. First of all, obviously, we know from Beferishim Gemara that Mesechus Raglav, of course, does not mean urinating, because the Gemara differentiates between Zeha Klal Hayaba Migdash, Kol HaMesechus Raglav Tzorich Tfila, V'Kol HaMatil Mayim Tzorich Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. So obviously the Gemara says beferish that mesech esraglov means moving his bowels. So that's for sure. There's no question. So why over here do we use that lashon? I realize it's very pashut. Rashi is pointing out that the mesech esraglov includes what is known by the words, how do we say to urinate? Meraglov. So it's the same kasha. In other words, even the terminology for urination refers to raglayim. That's what I was pointing out. So we're going to talk the entire process of defecation. And so it includes literally the concept of raglayim, even without specifically saying the mesech es raglav. So mamela, it just strengthens the kasha. That must be the pshat. Then I want to tell you something that I think may be a very important insight into what is happening to us. So there's a very famous shalah. We learned earlier in the daf that there's the inyan by Yael. The inyan is that the nachash was matilba zohama, right? And that, okay, so we took that to mean that it's just a getter of what happened with Yael. However, there's a famous shalah that says that this idea of the hitilba zohama, which the Gemara says that Yisrael, there were Eimdim al Har Sinai, so Paska Zuhu Matam. What this means, says the Shalah, is that the closer you are to Maimed Har Sinai, the closer you are to that which removes the Zohamat HaNochash. But with each passing generation from the time of Maimed Har Sinai, the Zohamat HaNochash increases in Yisrael. And that is the reason, says the Shalah, that we have all these crazy chumras. As each generation goes by, we find more and more chumras, more and more gezeiras, more and more takanas. What is that coming from? So he says, that's a pasuk, uporetz gader yishchenu nachash. So once there's an opening for the zuhamat hanachash, you made an opening, a poretz gader, so then the Zuhamat HaNachash will increase. Because of that, we call all of these dinim Gidorim, right? So that's Mishmeret LeMishmarti. In which case, as long as we have this process in effect, you can only survive by strengthening the gader against the Zohamat Tanachash. Aval, what he adds is that as we go closer and closer to the time of Geula, so then it's true that Bechol Dor, here's his Losher, Bechol Dor Vador Kishira Ulo Siv Chumrot, so it basically comes out to be really a Dioraita because it's a continuation of the initial Inyonim of the mitzvahs that were given. The 365 Lota says we're given Kineged all of the Inyonim of the Nachash. So since Bara Yetzirah, but Bara Taras Tavlin, fine. But then, La'atid, then nitdabek b'makom elyon. That's his lashon. So it occurred to me that the learning that we were doing on Erev Shabbos is very nogea this, because you have to ask yourself, why is it that it's extremely strange that we often see that the more the person has chumras, the worse they are? Why is that? In other words, why would there be a kilkel of basic midas teves and just normal inyanim of derech eretz in which there's a complete collapse because of chumras? So that the person relies on, well, I am a moral, wonderful human being because I have all of these chumras and I'll only eat the best heksher and so on and so forth. And they're the worst possible people to do business with or to talk. I mean, like, well, it's very strange. Why should that be? You would think that, I mean, certainly somebody who's makbid on all of these things, well, he's not going to be makbid on gezela in business. He's not going to be makbid in lashon hara. He's not going to be makbid. How is this possible? Right? So it strikes us as being shocking. So I think that that has to do with what we were talking about. That Kolev, the only way that he escaped the Atzas HaMeraglim was by going to Chevron. So we understand that the point of Chevron is the Machaneh was related back to the Ovis because they were all Saviv, Lemitasar, Sheyakov Avinu, and this became the Machaneh. The problem is that if you're Mizdabek to the expression of a thing, you lose contact to its etzem mekor. And that's what the Shola is saying, that ultimately, la'asid, we need to go back to the mekor ha'elyon, which is what Kalev was doing. He went back to the etzem chevron kvura of Yaakov Avinu, instead of to the machana, that's an expression of it. So, enochinami, as time goes on, you're in the beginning of this process, you're strengthening your connection to roots. But as you become further and further from the makar, then the focus on expressions as opposed to the roots is very damaging.